You're listening to the In Context podcast. I'm Stephen Neal, the Director for Communications and Partnerships, and I'm joined by Gary Matthews, who is the Director for the Midlands region. How are you doing, Gary?
I'm all right, mate. Thank you very much. Yeah, good to be here with you. Good to chat with you.
So do you want to just tell folks, I don't know how many people would know, just a little bit about your background, where you've come from, how you became a believer, and then how you ended up linking up with Medhurst.
Yeah, sure. So I've spoke a little bit about it, doing a few podcasts with Ian Williamson. So I come from a very working class background, even benefit class as well.
Where are you from?
I'm from the Northwest, so I spent a lot of time not down the road from here in Newton Heath. So Manchester.
Oh, we're recording this in my house in Oldham, just for those who don't know.
we're not far. I actually, when I lived in Newton Heath, I used to get the bus to Oldham swimming baths.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. So council estate in Newton Heath, and then Lancashire as well, Blackpool. So like I've grew up in different areas around the Northwest. So I come from a family of working class, benefit class. I didn't really hear the word benefit class until last year, actually. I've never really thought about it. Like a lot of people are on benefits, and it's a class of people, isn't it, to be fair?
So how would you understand working class and benefit class to be different?
So benefit class, is there a difference? But I've not heard the word. So a lot of it benefits just on benefits.
Yeah.
Where their whole income and everything is just benefits. They're not working. They're not on a low-paid job. Just benefits.
Yeah.
They're just living off the government, which was me for years.
Yeah. So I have a working class background, but only for little bits of my childhood were we on benefits. Most of the time my parents were working, but they were working in sort of what you consider traditional working class jobs. So my dad was like a heating engineer and my mum was a carer, it wasn't professional middle class jobs they were doing. But we weren't on benefits, so we would probably class as working class, but not benefit class, I guess would be the difference.
So when I grew up, I was in a single parent family. So my dad left. My mum was there with five kids on her own. So he had a few jobs wherever he wanted, but he wasn't there providing for us and supporting us. So I didn't grow up around people that was working.
Yeah.
I grew up around seeing a lot of crime, a lot of violence, addiction, alcoholism. So that's the people that was around me. They were my role models. So that was my life for many, many years, to be fair.
Were you brought up, like, going to church or anything like that? Or did at all?
No church whatsoever.
Nothing?
No. I remember, like, the infant school that I went to was a Church of England school. And we had to say our prayers and stuff there.
Yeah.
That was about it.
Did you know any Christians, like?
No.
Okay.
None whatsoever.
Huh.
None whatsoever. So the lifestyle that I chose, like, I'd been to church. So being around addictions and all that, That's the path I chose as well. I started to take drugs at an early age, started to drink. And as a result of that, I got into a lot of trouble with the police. Very, very rebellious. I got into a lot of trouble with the police. I was getting arrested all the time. Ended up in and out of prison. And then I went to church in prison.
Okay.
Just to get out of my pad, not to seek God.
Was that like just with the chaplain and that?
Yeah. Mm. Just with the chaplain, just to get out. I even took communion, which was wrong to do.
Right.
Now I know that. I didn't know that then. I didn't grow up around any church.
I blame the chaplain for taking it in, to be honest.
Yeah. he don't know who's a real believer.
That's right.
So now I understand that I shouldn't have took it.
So would you say you became a believer when you were in prison at some point, or was that later?
That was later.
Okay.
So, in and out of prison. For many, many years, to be fair. I was institutionalised.
Right.
People was fighting to get out. I was fighting to get back in.
Yeah.
I felt safe there. Many people do. It's sad. It's like a roundabout for so many people. They're just in and out, in and out, in and out.
Yeah, we work with some lads in Oldham who are exactly like that.
Yeah.
They're out for a very, very short time, and they just don't cope being out. So they want to go back in and they do stupid things. Yeah, not
to go back in.
Yeah. Often nothing major, but it's enough to get them to break their license and things like that.
So that's what I was like. So my last prison sentence, which was in 2007, I got myself arrested on purpose to go to prison. So people would like pack a bag to go on holiday.
Yeah.
They'll have like the flip-flops, the sun cream and all that. I'd have a radio, writing paper, stamps, an envelope and tobacco. Boxes and socks to take to prison.
To get back in.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? It was like crazy. And then I went to prison. But before that, I tried a few times to change. I tried to like stay off drugs and drink, and I just couldn't do it. I always ended up back on it.
Yeah.
And then I've gone to prison. And then when I was in prison, I started to talk to a drug worker.
Right.
And then she said, do you want to go to rehab? So I said, I'll go. And then I went to a rehab in Coventry. And then it was a Christian rehab.
Okay.
So then they started to tell me about the gospel, about Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, that's when I started to believe.
Okay, and then did you start going to a church in Coventry?
Yeah, so I started to go to a few different churches in Coventry. So I left the rehab and I started going back. I went back on the drugs and that, to be fair.
Okay.
Because I didn't really listen. I didn't really believe it.
Mm.
And left the rehab, went back on drugs, went back on drink. And then that was for a couple of months. And that's when I cried out to God. God, please save me. Please forgive me. And I was expecting, I'm not sure if you remember an old National Lottery advert where a big hand comes out of the sky and he says, it's you. I think I was expecting something like that.
Yeah.
But that didn't happen.
Mm.
But a few days later, I stopped swearing. My language was absolutely disgusting.
Mm.
And I stopped swearing, and then something just changed in me. And then I started to like go around a few different churches. And then I had an opportunity then to go to another Christian rehab in Wales.
Okay.
So I went to that, and then in that rehab we had to go out to church.
Yeah.
We'd done Bible studies, which I think was good for me, to be fair.
Mm.
So then, because I was in a community of people that loved Jesus, or was trying to love Jesus, people that had come from a similar background, we was doing Bible studies, we was praying together, I got baptized while I was there. So that's when I started to understand about Christianity, and that God loved me and changed me and he saved me. Yeah.
What kind of church was that you were in?
So it was many different churches.
Okay.
Yeah, so the church, it was probably a United Reformed, the guy that was running it.
Okay.
But there was charismatics there, there was like Pentecostals, lots of different.
A bit of everything.
Yeah, and then as the rehab, it would take the lads out and the girls, because I had girls home, lads home, and they'd travel to different churches.
Yep.
And like people would testify, one of the staff would preach, would sing. So that's when I got introduced to Christianity.
Okay. Now, one of the things that Medhurst exists to do is to get working class people, not just into the church, but raised up, trained up for ministry. And I know you were going into ministry. So how did you get from your church in Wales that you'd started being in, from that to then being sort of looking at ministry and training for ministry and then being appointed to do something?
Yeah, yeah. So it was quite a long time ago when I was in that rehab. Excuse me. And then I left there. And then I moved back to the Coventry area. And I started to go to a church there, which run a programme for people that had come from a working class background that was unchurched, that maybe had some kind of addictions, not just drugs or anything. And then they supported you and discipled you and mentored you. So that was good for me.
Is that a training specifically for going into ministry?
No. So that was just like...
Like a discipleship program?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So then that, and then throughout the years, God's just put a desire in me to do ministry.
Hmm.
I tried Bible college once. I went to Bible college, lasted a year, really struggled with the academic side of it.
Yeah.
Writing essays and all that kind of stuff.
Was that an in-person college, or was that an online college?
That was an in-person, yeah.
Okay.
So it was in person, and then you had to do a placement. So I was placed in the church. I was placed in like some community mission stuff, and then actually in college. So it was like full time. Well, not full time studying, but the whole thing was full time.
Yeah.
I tried that, and then I've done a little bit of ministry. I worked for the Church of England for a while.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was a 20s and 30s development worker.
Hmm.
So they realised that there's loads of 20s and 30s missing in the church, a big gap, and like, what can we do to reach that age group? So I worked there for a while doing that. And then I met Ian Williamson, because I actually done a course in Middlesbrough. So I moved to Middlesbrough for a year to do something called the Daniel Challenge.
Yep.
And that's when I met Ian Williamson.
Okay. Was Ian doing that course with you, or did you just happen to know Ian in the town?
I met Ian through somebody from that knew him from the course.
Okay. So you've got to Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
You've done various bits of ministry. How did he get from doing those bits of ministry to then thinking about joining Medhurst and then doing what you're doing now for us down in the West Midlands?
Yeah. Well, so I got married. I met a lovely lady. I got married. And then I didn't speak to Ian for a while. And then I was just struggling with the church in my local area. That a lot of the church I felt was kind of like going off the path a bit. And there's a lot of working class people around where I live, and I felt like they were just getting missed by the church, or the church was a very nice middle class church. I didn't see how, so I went to this church for a while, and I was just like, I just don't fit in. I don't understand the language. I don't understand this culture. And I was just thinking, like, how can I bring people to this church that they just won't get it? Yeah. And I felt that around my area, and I just found it difficult to find an evangelical biblical church. Yeah. So then I found a church to go to in Coventry, in Holbrooks. I'd actually been there about 13 years ago with Ian Williamson.
Okay.
And then I've gone there, and I've gone to see the pastor to see if we can get some support. So me and my wife was looking at potentially planting a church somewhere in Leamington to reach the unreached, what's getting lost.
Because again, people wouldn't think of Leamington Spa as the kind of place where there's loads of working class people around.
I don't know, but there is.
Right. Do you think that's common? Because I think people often go, I get asked to talk at places about this kind of stuff. Yeah. And I frequently get told, I'm in such and such an area that we don't really have working class people here. We don't really have anybody like that. What would you say to someone who said that?
I think they're everywhere. You're not like just going to get, you might get some really affluent areas like Million Dollar Houses where you're not getting a few working class people. Right. But I think every town's got them.
Yeah,
every town's got, even like affluent areas, I've got pockets of poverty.
I mean, that's like where I grew up. So yeah. I mainly grew up in a village in South Oxfordshire. Without question, a middle class, quite well-to-do, affluent village. But the idea that there were no working class people there were streets that were council houses. Mm-hmm. There were builders there were plumbers there were people doing what you consider working class jobs. Yeah. Not everybody was, you know, a lawyer.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. So I think there's often this misconception, isn't there? If you live in Oxfordshire or Buckinghamshire or one of the Shire counties or something, there aren't working class people here. It's just not true, is it?
Yeah. And I think people think all the working class people either live in high rise flats or live on council estates. But it's not true.
Right.
It's that you've got like working class people, benefit class people everywhere. I had a meeting with a pastor in Leamington, right in the centre of him in Leamington, and he was saying the same. Like, oh, we're really affluent, but round about it, there's loads of pockets of poverty.
Yeah.
There's homelessness, there's addiction, there's single parents, there's like just working people, builders, electricians, there's that.
I mean, even if you take somewhere like Oxford, which is your archetypal posh affluent city, 25% of that is council estates around the outside of Oxford. Exactly. So you've got Blackbird, Leeds and Barton and places like that.
Yeah.
That, and that's deprived council estates. And then you go into Oxfordshire, which is rural. The village I lived in, there was only about two streets of council housing, but there was loads more people who were on benefits and things in ordinary housing because the need outstripped what was available. So I think it's just useful, isn't it, to bust this myth that, you know, only places like Oldham have working class people and deprivation in them. It's just not true, is it?
Yeah, it's not. And then even affluent towns, there's just like deprivation, poverty, isn't there? Spiritual poverty.
Yeah.
They're bankrupt. Many people don't know Jesus.
Yes.
You can have all the money in the world, and like, but you don't know Jesus, then you're poverised.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah. So you were looking at planting in Leamington.
Yeah, potentially. And then I went to chat to my pastor, Ben Holmes, who's my pastor now. And then he kind of reintroduced me to Ian again, who I've lost touch with, not spoke to him for a while.
Mm.
And then, so then we were chatting about what that might look like, and then spoke to Ian, and he said, told me about what Medhurst is doing. I didn't really know much about Medhurst, to be fair. And he told me what Medhurst were doing, and that looking at potentially employing somebody to do similar work, what's happening in the north, in the Midlands. So I ended up applying for the job and then got it, and that's where I'm at now.
Fantastic. And how have you found working for Medhurst? What have you found good about it? What have you found perhaps harder and more challenging about it?
Yeah, I found it good. I found it a bit slow. I think in my mind and in my dreams and imagination, I was like, I'm going to start this job and we're going to like supporting hundreds of churches already. I found that it's not that fast and it's a bit slow ministry.
Mm.
I think people might have a mindset we're going to just go in the deep end and this is going to happen, that's going to happen, that's going to happen. I found that that's not the case. I found it really encouraging chatting to the pastors, different pastors that are working in different areas of deprivation.
Do you mean the guys who are already in the
network? Yeah, a lot of the guys that are already on it. And then I've had an opportunity to meet lots of other pastors that are working, not part of Medhurst, that are potentially looking at joining Medhurst in different areas across the Midlands. So in Birmingham, in Droitwich, in Coventry, Northampton. The Midlands is a big area.
Yeah.
It's a very big area. So I found it really encouraging to chat with a lot of the guys, to tell them about Medhurst, to tell them what we do. Also chatting with the guys that are already part of Medhurst as well. Such a variety of people. Yeah. There's not one mould that fits everybody.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I found it really, really encouraging because the vision's still there to plant a church down the line. Mm. So I found it really encouraging and challenging looking at some of the struggles, the battles, the hopes, the scars that the men have that are doing the work.
Mm.
It's not an easy job.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
No. I mean, and I think that's one of the reasons Medhurst exists, isn't it?
To support these men.
Exactly. Exactly. It's a hard slog. It's all slow burn work, you know, and let's be honest, nobody gets into working in deprived communities to get famous, do they?
No.
I mean, it's just no one sort of gets well known doing this kind of work. No. And it requires a lot of support.
It does, yeah.
So I think it's brilliant that we can hopefully replicate what we've managed to do in the north, in the Midlands, and maybe even in future down in the south as well. I think that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. So, yeah, so I found that really encouraging. I found Ian Williamson very encouraging. I found it really encouraging just seeing working class people. There's not a lot of working class people in ministry.
Yeah. I should say at this point, because this isn't like on video, Ian's not there with a gun to your head making you
he's
say
not,
this.
No. He's giving me a bonus at the end of the month. He's giving me an extra like few quid in my pay packet.
How have you found him encouraging to you particularly?
So I found him very encouraging. So I think when you come from a working class background, you bring different types of baggage with you.
Mm.
You bring different types of struggles with you.
Yeah.
Either from whatever, so the things that we pick up in our upbringing, the things that we pick up from the culture that we come from, do you know what I mean? There's different traits, different characteristics, different sins that you've done in the past maybe.
Yep.
So I found him very non-judgmental, very encouraging, very motivational as well, do you know what I mean?
Yep.
So he understands me.
Yeah.
He gets me, he speaks my language. So I found that really encouraging. He's very patient as well.
Yeah.
I found that with him.
Good. One thing I did want to ask you about, because I think you'll have insights that a lot of other people don't. Could you, just before I ask you specifically what I want to ask you, can you just tell us a little bit about who your wife is, where she's coming from?
Yeah, so my wife, Anya, she's lovely. So she's Polish. So she's from Poland. We're just gonna celebrate our 11th wedding anniversary.
Ah, congratulations.
Yeah, so she come from Poland, I think maybe 20 years ago. She comes from a Catholic background, but then she got born again, she got converted. So she's great. She's really supportive. She comes from a different background to me.
Yep.
She actually studied and done a master's in drug and alcohol rehabilitation.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
So you've married a wife and a carer.
Yeah, yeah. So she looked after me. The thing is, I was clean and sober before we met.
Praise God.
Which is like good for her.
Yes.
And probably good for me as well, to be fair. So she supports, she's just training to be a counsellor.
Oh, fantastic.
So she, at the minute, she supports teens, like counselling with teens in college. Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, so what I wanted to ask you about, the reason why I was bringing that up is because you therefore have a cross-cultural marriage.
Massive, yeah.
So we talk a lot in Medhurst about cross-cultural church work, but you're sort of living a cross-cultural marriage. So could you just sort of give us some insight about like some of the good things about having a cross-cultural marriage and some of like the difficulties of trying to understand someone who's from Poland and not from your background, and for her trying to understand you and from your background?
So I think it's took a lot of work, more so probably on my side. I think I was quite immature and stuff, even though I'm old-ish. When we got married, I was quite selfish and stuff. So I think marriage has definitely been a blessing like that. I think I struggled early on looking at the differences, which is a good thing, like we're different, like we complement one another.
In sort of, what sort of ways are you different?
So the differences was obviously, so our culture and our background's different. Our priorities might be different. So Polish people are very straightforward. They tell you what they think straight away, to be fair. I'm quite reserved. I'm like, if we've got an issue, I'll just put a brick there and I won't say anything and I won't say anything and I won't say anything. Where I found Polish people, they just tell you straight away, you've done this, you don't like, which I really struggled with at first.
But that, I would have thought that would be quite a good, because a lot of working class people would be quite blunt and frank, right? I mean, I, depending on what it is, I swing between those things. But I would have thought with a working class background and an Eastern European sort of background, you'd get quite a lot of crossover in that regard. Because we've got a lot of Eastern European folks in our church, and I would agree, I like it, but they're like proper it's just like, I think this, and you're like, oh, all right.
So I like it, and I think it's good, and it is that crossover. I think what I struggle with it with is I don't like confrontation,
right?
So my background, confrontation always ended up in violence. Do you know what I mean? So I'm better at it now. I think it's great. I think like there's no point in like beating around the bush. Like if someone's got an issue here, I've picked it up more often now as well. So I'm getting a little bit better at it. But yeah, I struggle with the confrontation side of things.
Interesting. I'm the opposite.
Opposite. Just get it done. Get it said.
I'm more of a let's say it and I'll talk about it. But like you, I have a level where if stuff starts to get like really aggressive, I will. I just put the shutters down then. Whereas my wife is not. She's from a very sort of conflict averse background, so she doesn't like conflict at all. So I've probably readjusted in that direction. Do you know what I mean? And sort of learned not to just like say stupid stuff.
So it crosses over into like just not even marriage, other things as well, don't it? So like I'm just like, man, someone will do something and I'll just like put a brick there and put another brick and I won't say anything and I'll let it manifest in my head. Where she's just like, she's kind of lost the Polishness a little bit though now.
Interesting.
I think being around me, because I'm really chilled. Do you know what I mean? So like, I'm really chilled, but like I can let things build up. So so we've really, she's helped me with being a bit more assertive.
How does she find trying to minister in working class context, and how did she find being in church in a more middle class context as a Polish person? I don't know what sort of class background she comes from in Poland, but
So she comes from, they're probably classed as middle class, because she comes from a family of teachers. But they probably live working class. Do you know what I mean? The very like simple life, not got loads of money. Her dad was a teacher, her sister's a teacher. Do you know what I mean? So they come from that kind of background, but with a Catholic culture as well. So she found working with a working class, I think initially it was a bit of a shock, a bit of a struggle to her. But then her last job, she was working in a church. I think she worked there for about 3 years, actually, reaching out to the working class. So she'd done a lot of stuff with working class, coming alongside the women, mentoring them, discipling them, even a Muslim lady as well, supporting families with very difficult needs. So she's done good with it.
Does she feel more at home in like an English middle class church or more at home in a more working class church?
I think she can feel at home in both.
Okay. So what would it be that would make her feel at home in a church?
I think she's just good with people.
Okay.
It's the people. She's so Polish people, they're very family orientated. Mm. They're very friendship orientated. Yep. Friendships are a big thing.
Yep.
For her, where I need to learn that a bit.
But I would guess that would be, again, in a more working class context. I think if you ask the middle class church or you ask the working class church, mm-hmm. are relationships important? They both go, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think what they mean by that are often very different.
Yeah.
And I guess if you are very relational and therefore you want a lot of people facing time and you want a lot of people who you can hang around with a lot in the day, or, you know, you can have fairly easygoing, regular conversation with.
Yeah.
I would have thought a working class church would be better.
Yeah.
Because a middle class church, I'm not saying they don't have friends and they're not friendly, but that'd be more sort of scheduled and diarised and less kind of people focused, more diary managed, I guess.
Yeah.
Is that something that she's found in the different contexts you've been in, or is that not really something that's...
I don't think that's really come up, to be fair.
Okay.
But the relationships that she has got, she'll invest in.
Hmm.
Where she's very patient with her friends as well. So if people let me down a few times, I'm like, whatever, see you later, mate.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I am very patient with people. I keep reaching my hand out to people, but I struggle with people like saying one thing, doing another thing.
Yeah.
They're going to meet you, they don't meet you, they're going to meet you, they don't meet you, they're going to meet you, they don't meet you. I just expect them not to meet you, to not to do the things that they say. Yeah. That they're going to do. I was preaching a few weeks ago and like one of the examples I said was like, are we people of our word? Mm-hmm. Do people trust us? And I said, sometimes some of the people that I'm around, I wear a hearing aid, sometimes I might just turn it off because what they're saying to me and what they're doing, there's no point in it saying to me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I've got a lot of people that let me down, where she's got some of the friends as well that let her down. The council, something comes up, but she's just still there loving them. Do you know what I mean? She's just like, she's so far more patient with her friends than me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. She's
I'd be the same as you, though. Do you know what I mean? If someone doesn't turn up for a meeting, I might try another time. But if they don't turn up for that one, that's it, you know. I'm not doing any more running on that.
That's what I'm like, where she'll, like, been let down quite a few times, and then she's still there because she appreciates the person, even though with a letdown.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, it's good.
So, just in coming back to your role with Medhurst, what are you doing at the minute, day-to-day, in your role? How are you serving the network? How are you building the network? What does like an average day look like for you in your job? Yeah,
so there's not really an average day, to be fair. It varies quite a bit. Mm. So I've not been doing it long. I started in October.
Mm.
So maybe what, 4 months, 5 months? So there was nothing really happening in the Midlands. There was a couple of churches that was part of the network, or one just joining.
Mm.
So there was a couple of churches. So I've just been trying to contact lots of different pastors in different areas of the Midlands and not getting many responses, which I kind of understand. I imagine a pastor, like a leader of a church, gets bombarded with emails, a lot of people send them through and they just don't get back to you, which is a bit discouraging, a bit disheartening. But I've learned to deal with that and I'll just get on with it and accept it is what it is. Do you know what I mean?
I'll be honest, I find that a bit sad.
Yeah.
Because I get emails all the time from outside organisations wanting to tell me about their thing. And I appreciate an awful lot of them. I'm like, we're probably not going to work with these guys. But I'd at least send an email back and go, I'm very sorry.
Exactly.
Or thanks for your email. Don't think we're going to do it, but thanks anyway. I don't think that costs it. I don't quite understand why that happens.
Yeah, I don't. But I'm letting it not bother me.
Mm.
Where in the past it would have bothered me.
Yeah, sorry, I'm not trying to make it bother you.
No, that's not. I've come to a point where, like, I was chatting to someone about it the other day. Like, I don't expect anything from people, but I want the best for people, and it's not going to change how I am with people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I think I've just been like with a letdown thing. I've been let down most of my life.
Yeah.
So I don't like. I'm not going to change, giving my 100% for the people or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But if I don't get that back, I'm all right with it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so, like, I agree though. It don't take much to like just say send an email. Oh, thanks, but no thanks. Yeah. I've had that off a few churches, but yeah. Not a lot.
And that's fine. Yeah, isn't it? If people don't want to work with you, they don't want to work with you. Yeah. That's okay. But, and I thought they'd just at least tell you that.
Yeah. So I've just been pinging lots of emails out. So we've got a new strategy of what we're going to do instead of that, because that's just like we're not getting it. So what I'm looking at doing is putting on some pastors' lunches in different areas.
Good.
So then we can just invite loads of pastors. Whatever church is going to host it, they can invite pastors. Yeah. We'll invite loads of other pastors. FIEC, they've been very helpful.
Good.
In putting me in contact with pastors. So, yeah, I'm looking at doing, like, pastors' lunches. Again, that's slow.
Yep.
But it's happening. So we've got a few churches that we're going to potentially be doing it with.
Excellent.
So then I think that'll be easier to get the word across.
How many churches have you got involved in those?
Doing the pastors' lunches. Yeah. So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4 churches in different areas. Good. So we're looking at doing one. The ones that I nearly signed up to do it, just waiting for dates, is one in Birmingham, one in Coventry, one in Northampton, and one in, where's your one? I forgot where everyone is. We're looking at doing one in Leicester.
Okay. Yep. So if you take that those places, if someone's listening on here and they go, oh, that sounds like something they might go to, how would they get into that?
So they can get into that. We'll put my email at the bottom of the podcast, maybe. Mm-hmm. Send me an email, contact Medhurst Ministries, say that you're interested in finding out where the pastor's lunch is. So we're going to put a spread on, so you can have some lunch, and we'll just give a little bit of a presentation about the work that Medhurst does in supporting churches in deprived areas or areas of deprivation and forgotten areas. Mm. So we're looking for pastors that come along as well that want to support the work, not just need supporting.
Yeah.
So it can be a two-way partnership.
Yep.
Like churches that want to get involved in local mission. There's a massive mission field on our doorstep.
Yes.
There's lots of working class people getting missed. I was looking at some statistics and I'm like, I don't know how accurate they are, but it was saying that about 50 to 60% of the England is working class.
Yep.
That's a lot of working class people. That's about 30 million people.
Yep.
And if people are not reaching them, if organisations, ministries like Medhurst or pastors are not reaching them, that's a lot of people not going to hear the gospel.
Yep. And I think if you look around our churches, I mean, the stats on all of this are pretty undeniable.
Yeah, yeah.
If you go to the most affluent areas, you're more likely to find a church.
Yeah.
The more deprived your area, the less likely to find the church.
Yeah.
Even if you do find churches in deprived areas, they tend to be smaller than the ones in the more affluent areas.
Yeah, yeah.
Southeast has more churches than anywhere in the country.
Yeah.
Northeast has less churches than almost anywhere in the country. So the further north and the more deprived you go,
less churches
there are. Yeah. And even if you look around the churches that we do have, the demographic that is missing more than almost anybody else is working class people.
Yep. Yeah. So we're going to do the pastor's lunches, see how that one goes.
Mm.
We started a monthly prayer meeting for pastors that are working in these areas.
Fantastic.
So we do that in the Midlands. We've done one in Leicester. We're actually in Birmingham on Monday. So each month we're meeting up for different pastors. I've been like meeting different pastors, contacting them, chatting with them. So we're doing that. So it's just like contacting people at the minute, trying to network with people. I've been to a few different conferences where I've been able to network with people, introduced who Medhurst is, what Medhurst is about.
Which conferences have you been to?
So I went to FIEC Church Planters Conference a few weeks ago.
Brilliant.
That was good. So I managed to chat with a few pastors there that are just starting up, or they've just planted. I've got a meeting, various meetings in a month or so, with a couple of different pastors that are looking at joining the FIEC. So they're looking at potentially how we can support them as Medhurst as well.
Mm. And what sort of things would you offer these guys? So you're saying we're going to try and get a Medhurst network in the Midlands. We want to get like support and all of that in place. What does support from Medhurst look like? Is it just like a prayer letter every month or something? Or what do we do?
No. So we're pretty hands-on, to be fair. So I went to a prayer meeting in Stockport a few months ago for Medhurst churches.
Yep.
And I was chatting to the pastor there, and he was saying he's joined a few networks, but he's never had the amount of support that he gets from Medhurst.
Mm.
He said Medhurst is like quite hands-on, not like we're overpowering. We're there to support you. We're there to encourage you if you need any advice about what you're doing.
Mm.
Ian's on call all the time. I'll be there to support you as well.
Yeah.
Any struggles that they've got going on, any ideas, preaching with them, praying with them. There's lots of contextualized teaching as well, what Medhurst does. So there's got some women's training as well, which are contextualized.
Yep.
They're going to start, which you're going to be leading, Ragged School of Theology.
Yep.
That's going to be through Medhurst as well. So kind of like teaching, theological training for everyday people, really.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's lots of stuff you can tap into.
Loads of stuff.
There's sort of practical supports, funding supports, networking supports. Basically,
we meet up as well. So we do a pastor's retreat every year. We do family retreats every year, which is covered by Medhurst. So the pastors and the wives and the children get a holiday. There's lots of stuff going on.
Yeah, I mean, I've found it a really beneficial network as a pastor.
Yeah.
Being involved in stuff, just having a mutual support network of people who get what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because there's other local churches, as you know, in Manchester, and they're solid, good churches, but our contexts are just so different.
Yeah.
And the issues that we're facing are just not issues that they're running into.
Yeah.
So having a group of people where you can just say, oh, you know, what do you do when you've got all these homeless guys? Or what do you do when you've got all these, you know, addicts who need support? Or what do you do for people who, you know, they're doing fine, they're not on benefits, but they don't think and act and operate in the way that the guys down in the southeast do? What do we do?
Yeah.
And just having guys who are running into those same problems and those same issues, I think is really, really helpful.
Yeah. And I think as well, like you was talking before about like kind of living my house cross-culturally, a lot of pastors that are wanting to work in some of these deprived areas or hard to reach areas are middle class guys, but that want to work cross culturally in a working class area. So then to have working class men that are in the ministry, it's great for them as well. Do you know what I mean? Because they can peck our heads and ask us about different areas, what they might be struggling and what that looks like from an insider.
If you was dealing with, say, a middle class guy, because I think sometimes as well, when we talk about sort of church in our places, there can be a sense of you've got to be so a special sort of person to go. And I don't think that's true.
No, I don't.
I think anyone who loves the Lord Jesus in theory should be able to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's say there's a middle class guy listening to this and going, you know, I can see the need. I think there may be value in going to like an Oldham or to a Coventry or somewhere like that. What things would you say to them that they need in order to be prepared for coming into a working class community?
Yeah, I think having support. So that's why Medhurst exists for people like that, but not just from the working middle class background, but from a working class background as well. Having support to move into that area. I think having a real open mind as well.
In what sort of way?
I think not to come and just to expect the unexpected. Kind of, do you know what I mean? So I think the cultures will be very different.
Mm-hmm.
So not every working class area is very the same either.
No.
The language might be different. The understanding might be different. I think you need to come, you need to be in it for the long run.
Mm.
I think you need to be accepted by this community before you can do anything in the community, to be fair. I think having a good plan, a good prayer team, support, stuff like that.
So what would you suggest? Let's say you got a middle class guy coming in.
Yeah.
He needs to get to know the community. You know there are cultural barriers there. What sort of things would you suggest they do in order to try and get known and build up relationships and become a trusted person?
Yeah. So I remember listening to a talk by Ian Williamson, who was being interviewed by an FIEC guy, and he was asking the same question: if a middle class person or a church, they want to reach an area, what's the best way to do it? And like a lot of areas, what I go in, they want to put like soup kitchens on, they want to put like food banks on, they want to put like mercy ministries on, which are good things, but that's not going to change the community. The best way for you to be in that community and change that community is to move in that community, to live alongside the people, to send your kids to the same school as the kids, to shop in the same shops as the kids, as they shop in, to go to the same football matches they're going, maybe in the area, to find out what's happening in the area where you can just live amongst the people.
Yeah.
To be accepted.
Yeah.
You need to live amongst them. You need to be one of them, that you're not just there like going in and then dipping out.
Yeah. So you think presence is really, really vital.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think just being there is enough, or do you think they'll need to do other stuff?
So I think initially just being there.
Yeah.
I think just being there.
Yeah.
I think having a plan's great, but your plan can change.
Yeah. So in terms of your situation, you're saying you're still looking at planting in Leamington down the line?
Potentially somewhere, yeah, whether it's Leamington or somewhere else.
So what sort of things are you looking to do at the minute to try and get yourself to a point where you can plant?
Yeah, so what I'm going to do, I'm going to do the Ragged School of Theology.
Are you going to come and do it with me?
Yeah.
I can ruin you before you start.
That's what I mean, mate. Just crush me. You crush me, mate, and then Ian can build me back up.
That's right. That's how teamwork
Good
works.
Good teamwork, mate. So I'm looking at doing that. Just my whole work at Medhurst as well, getting a much greater understanding from different pastors, working with pastors that are already doing that work in deprived areas, or just like, and even not so deprived, but just working with the working class or pockets of poverty. So to get a better understanding, so my expectation might be a bit different what it might look like. I'm also looking at doing a pastoring training from summertime.
Okay.
That'll be at a church in Coventry, with training and ministry aimed around, I don't know, probably working, reaching out into the areas around the church that's not being reached. So I'll be doing a pastoring training, look at what that's like.
Great.
Preparing myself for that.
Are you looking to try and build a team to go and take with you, or are you looking to just go and plant as like a sort of pioneer couple and then get something going on the ground?
I'm not at that stage yet.
Okay.
To be fair, it's just like, I think it's just something that God put in me ages ago, and it's just there.
Yeah.
And now just the pastoring training, look at what that's, again, it might not be in Leamington, it might be somewhere else. I'm very early on it, do you know what I mean? The idea is just mulling around in my mind.
Yeah.
But the whole point of doing the pastoring training, doing the Ragged School of Theology, working for Medhurst, that's all like stepping stones and training and preparation for planting.
So if someone's like listening to that and saying, okay, well, that's where you want to go in future, that's what we want to do, maybe they want to help and support that in some way, what sort of things would you need from people? What would you hope they'd contact you and say, this is what we can do?
Prayer. I think prayer is a great thing. Pray for me, pray for my wife, for our vision, but pray for Medhurst as well, and other people that might want to go into places that are not being reached. We need many missionaries in this country. I think pray for that. If you've got an idea, do you know what, we need a church plant here. You might be in an area where you think, do you know what, we need a church plant. There's nobody planted here. There's like loads of people that are just being lost and just left out of the net. Get in touch with us about that. Might be an idea. Or if you think, do you know what, I'd love to be part of a church plant, I'm ready to move, or I want to be part of something that God's doing, that might be with me, it might be within one of the other churches at Medhurst. Jesus said, didn't it, the harvest is plentiful, the labourers are few. We've got many, many churches that could do with people that are ready and willing to come and support them churches.
That's brilliant. Well, it's been brilliant having a chat with you about all of that, and hopefully if people are interested in supporting either Medhurst or specifically a planting into sort of more deprived part of Leamington, we'll get details up and then people can chat with you about that. Anyway, good chatting, Gary.
And you, Steve. Bless you, mate.